Welcome to the Death Doula Duo. I'm Sarah Kovash.
I'm Jennifer O'Neill.
And this is where we explore the profound mysteries of life and all things death.
Welcome to the Death Doula Duo. We are here today with Russ Bridges of Carriage Services. And Russ, I'm just going to let you tell us a little bit about what you do.
Absolutely. So yeah, as I do work for Carriage Services. My company operates funeral home and cemeteries in multiple states. My area of focus is primarily Oklahoma, and I work at both Rest Haven in Oklahoma City, Moore Funeral and Cremation in Moore, Havenbrook in Norman, and then Lawton Ritter down in Lawton, Oklahoma.
Awesome. Well, in today's episode, we're going to talk about the ways that you can prepare for your death and see how this can make everything easier really for families, as well as dispel some misconceptions about the funeral home industry and how it has evolved.
So Russ, if you could choose one unusual way to be remembered after you die, what would it be?
That's a great question. Man, one unusual way. I think I would love to be shot into outer space, honestly. I think that's a pretty memorable way.
I would remember that.
Yeah.
I mean, that. That's a great answer.
Maybe it's you know, getting put into like a Tesla and then Elon Musk, just some random experiment, shoots me in outer space as a human, is like a frozen human popsicle.
Have you, like, I just watched a show about that that's been giving me nightmares, actually.
What was it?
Three Body Problem.
Oh, I started that and I haven't finished. I guess it's time to finish, huh?
Yeah.
I barely started. I should clarify.
So, yeah. That's awesome.
Show on the list.
So, I mean, we met Russ a few weeks ago and just immediately had a connection and realized that we share a passion of helping people prepare for end of life. And you know, it's the one inevitable thing that we all face. And I know that you've seen big differences with people who have prepared and who haven't. And I was hoping that you can just tell us a little bit about what you've seen and some tangible differences between people and when they do prepare and when they don't prepare.
Yeah, there really are massive differences. I've done a couple different roles within this industry, one of which is a family service counselor. And the task of the family service counselor is to sit down with families that have lost a loved one and then go through the planning process that usually involves planning for the cemetery services in addition to the funeral home services as well, right? So there's a couple different components to that. And, you know, I've seen in multiple cases where families have prepared and the ones that have not prepared, and there's, you know, a huge difference. One is, not only have families suffered the loss of a loved one and experienced the trauma associated with that, but they've also been, I guess, presented with the financial obligation on top of that trauma that magnifies the situation even worse. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a huge, huge issue. The worst scenarios that I've seen is where people are completely unprepared financially. They don't have a lot of means to do much of anything, but you know, certainly all funeral homes and cemeteries, in order to facilitate the services through them, they have to be paid for. It's just it's the way that the industry operates. So, you know, I've seen people have to go out and get personal loans, gather money from family. Some of those loans at 15, 20% interest. You know, these are mm-hmm. terrible, exorbitant fees that go on top of the trauma of losing a loved one. And then, of course, on top of the financial aspect, going through and just having the service, right? So, you know, what we don't talk about very often with the funeral services is that a lot of these things are based off of longstanding traditions and customs. And these traditions and customs are there to help us initially deal with the grief of what's going on and the trauma of what's going on. But when we start going into the memorial service, the graveside service, the closing of the space, the marker that's being placed, all of those things are designed to move people through that shock of losing someone and into the phase of kind of mourning and then remembrance, right? So when they don't plan and there's money issues that go along with that, it just makes the entire situation worse.
Yeah. I mean, and it's such an emotional process. And then to have to deal with all of that on top of it. I don't really want to have to worry about grave markers and things like that when I'm dealing with the loss of a loved one. So,
well,
I get that.
I'd just like to share a personal story. I didn't know my father growing up, but I did find him through a DNA test. And unfortunately, he had already passed. But one of the things that I had discovered is that he was buried in Nevada without a grave marker. I almost didn't find him because the grave marker that he did have was just a little metal plate, and his name, the tag inside, had been kind of scrunched together from the rain and whatnot. And so they had him listed with a different spelling. But through all of my digging, I found it, and I actually was able to get a grave marker placed for him. But he was buried in a pauper's field because he didn't have the money to be buried properly. I don't know how it varies in different states, but I'm sure every state handles that kind of thing differently. But of course, as you were saying, that, you know, having those things pre-planned are always going to be less stressful. I mean, and not 30 years later, having to get a grave marker placed.
And finding it, yeah.
Yeah, I guess the inverse of, you know, not having the funds available is the people that do pre-plan, right? So what's neat about working in a cemetery, if there is anything neat about it, is that most funeral homes and cemeteries, they're really kind of time capsules, which is really, really neat. So you can, you know, during the 60s, 70s, 80s, depending on when and how old the cemetery is, most cemeteries have paper files of everything dating back for a long, long time. So, you know, unfortunately, when someone does pass, it's the family service counselor's job to pull that file that's been there since 1970 or 1940 or whenever it is and open it up and see, you know, what they own.
That's interesting.
And what they plan for.
It is.
Yeah,
it is interesting. It's neat at the same time, but it also kind of helps us to remind ourselves the value and benefit of prearranging these things. You know, I just saw one on Monday that in 2003, they bought two spaces. They paid $872 for those two spaces. Now in 2024, each of those spaces is $4,198.
That's a great example. Yeah.
Fantastic example.
It sounds like my grandparents. That was one of the things they blessed our family with, pre-planning everything.
Yeah.
So we didn't have to deal with all that stress.
It's a big deal.
It is.
Yeah. I mean, the stress of losing a loved one, certainly. But I can't tell you how many times I've sat down with kids, whoever it is in the family, that next of kin, and open the file and then tell them space is paid for, opening and closing is paid for, markers paid for, outer burial containers paid for. Everything's taken care of. All I need you to do is a couple things here, and then we're going to get you on our way. And the relief that you see on people's faces is enormous. Mm-hmm. You know, it just allows them, thank you, mom and dad, for taking care of this and being here. It really allows people to be there for their loved ones that are left behind, you know, and sends a message to them that I thought enough of this to take care of in advance so you wouldn't have to.
It really does.
Yeah.
It really does.
I like how you use the word time capsule too, because one of the things I enjoy doing when I travel is going to cemeteries.
Oh, we have that in common. Maybe that's why we're friends.
Maybe that's why we're here. Yeah. But yeah. And I mean, and my grandmother had pre-planned and she had picked out certain things, and we wanted to upgrade her to like pink because I think she had picked blue or something. I don't know. But, you know, we could make those little adjustments that we wanted to, but it was nice that everything was planned out and all of that. So
absolutely.
My grandparents had their markers set without the engraving. I mean, that has to be such a relief.
Yeah. And, you know, I hate to say it, but even today, left over from the COVID era, when we were ordering markers and monuments and things like that, supply chain would delay part of this process. Mm-hmm. I'm a firm believer that closure, the latter stages of closure is triggered by kind of one final thing. That's usually the monument being engraved or the marker date of passing plate being put on that. And we saw markers that were taken or monuments that were taking up to a year to get.
Oh, gosh.
Monuments, they're, you know, monuments and markers. Markers were 9 months out.
Yeah, that's got to really hamper the grieving process.
It does. Yeah. I really do believe it does. Yep.
So do people end up spending, usually when they spend time with you, do they end up preparing for everything or can they pick and choose things?
They can pick and choose things. We like to talk to people about kind of everything, right? So there's usually about six different things that people want to entertain when they're talking about a pre-arrangement. And you can imagine, you know, on the left side of a screen is cemetery. On the right-hand side of the screen is funeral home. There's a lot of kind of moving parts within each one of those that has to be taken care of in order to get what we refer to as like a complete plan, if you will.
Sure.
But we don't sell everything as kind of a complete package, if you will. Our job is to sit down and understand what is the priority of the people that are sitting in front of us. Sometimes it's space, which is a cemetery. Sometimes it's the funeral home itself that's more important. And our job is just to talk to them about the details of what they're looking to do. And so we'll do cemetery, we'll do funeral home, we'll do it all in one spot.
Okay. Yeah. Well, so what are some common misconceptions that people have about making funeral arrangements or the funeral industry in general?
I think some interesting things come out of that. Probably the first one is when the industry's evolving, right? So you may have seen news up in Colorado about a funeral home that was unlicensed to a degree. And there were some shady things that happened at that organization up there. That's a remnant of the old version of funeral homes and how those things can operate and how bad legislative process can make things like that happen. The new version of that is that the vast majority of what is being sold is backed by insurance companies, right? So there's some huge value and benefit to that. A lot of people, you know, let's call it 60 years ago, they'd go down to their mom and pop funeral home and they would say, hey, you know, to whoever it was, I would like to buy a funeral plan in advance. And they would go, okay, well, just come by the office here, pay me $40 every month, and I'll make sure that you and your wife are taken care of. Cool. There's risks associated with that. Some of those risks could be that they could be taking that $40 and buying a Maserati with it or something, right? Mm-hmm. New version is that all of those things are insurance backed, at least on the funeral home side of the house. And what that does is it makes the funeral home plan portable. So the misconception is if you buy something at a rest haven, as an example, if you move to the West Coast or a different part of the country, you can actually take that insurance backed pre-arrangement policy and move it to a new funeral home anywhere throughout the country.
Is that an easy process?
It is relatively easy. There is some review that needs to take place. It's as simple as taking the details of what it is, how much you paid for it, taking it to the new funeral home, having them review it. If they are willing to accept it as it is, signing over a form that says this one is now belongs to this funeral home, and that's it. Relatively easy.
Okay. So you mentioned that the funeral industry is evolving. Can you kind of expound on that? How in the recent years they've accommodated the changing cultural attitudes?
Yeah, that's
towards death and mourning. I guess I should be clarifying.
Yeah, I think that's a real interesting one. I mean, I think there's some, I don't even know how to refer to it as. Maybe it's new technology, right? So there's new things that are readily available to families. Aquamation is one of those things.
I'm really interested in that one. I would love to have my own aquamation.
It's very, very interesting. Service. There's other variations as well. Composting, that is another one interesting as well. I don't know if I necessarily agree with the cultural differences, right? I think maybe I need to dig into that term a little bit more. I think the process of death and dying and the mourning process for people has been relatively the same over the years. In that, I firmly believe that the death and dying process, when the survivors are in and around those, you know, I guess dealing through that process, there's steps that are involved in that process, such as the, let's say, a visitation or a traditional church service and then a graveside service and then closing of the grave. And all of those things have been, they've been doing those things the same way for many, many years. Now, when you introduce something like cremation, you pretty much, you can still do the same thing.
Sure.
Aquamation, same thing. Composting, same thing. So I see a lot of that being similar because I just am a firm believer that those events, if you will, enable people to move through that grieving process into the mourning and then remembrance and then moving on, right? I think that's a good thing. I don't know. I don't know if I answered the question as best I can, but.
Well, I guess one of the things I'd like to mention, or I guess really touch on with the cultural changes is that, you know, before the funeral industry came around, the family did a lot of the things that the funeral home now does. And so I wonder how much we need to stick to those traditions that have not always, you know, that have not always been around. I mean, they're not necessarily ancient traditions. They're fairly new if you consider different burial traditions around the world. So I guess that's what I see is, you know, are they changing their views on some of the ways that they've handled it since they got started, I guess, you know, just as far as maybe body care and things like that, because a lot of times the family handled that before.
Absolutely. And I think in some cultural cases today, the family takes care of it, or religious leaders in their in and around that circle take care of that today.
So yeah, that's true.
Really super common for funeral directors to sit with community leaders that are in and around that family that have suffered loss.
Okay.
And there will be something like ritualistic washing.
Yes, that's, yeah.
Yep. That is very, very common. There's, what's the phrase? It's something to the tune of it's like a shroud.
Yes.
Right? So wrapping the shroud and those kind of things. So those are common. Those happen probably much more often than you think. It is, yeah, still here today. And
good. I'm glad to hear that. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And what I hear too is from nurses and even death doulas that when they're aware of that and they can make the family aware of that, that they can do that before having the body go to the funeral home then. And that's, I think, part of what we want to do is just raise awareness that that's a possibility for people, even if it's not under a specific religious wanting, just to be able to have that time with the family before calling the funeral home. Mm-hmm. So
mainly to assist in that grieving process, because I think you and I both agree that that could be a really beneficial thing to happen in your grieving process, is to be able to include that, incorporating that part of the death process, or the after death process, I should say.
Do you see, and I'm kind of moving us again, but there's so many places that I want to go here, but as far as green options, do you see your company moving in a direction toward that?
I see us evaluating them. Now, a lot of the rules and regulations regarding the green aspect of the funeral services and such is largely dictated by legislation in any given state.
Sure.
So did a little bit of research on, I think it's called terramation. I think that's the term for composting.
Okay. Yep. I think you're right. Yeah.
So,
I think I've heard that one.
Yeah. There's like 6 states currently that have passed legislation that allow the composting piece to work. My company certainly looks at everything to determine viability on it. And, you know, I who knows what they're going to ultimately choose to do, but it seems like it's picking up traction. There's certainly viability in it. And we've had a chance to talk to some of our partners on the West Coast about not only composting, but also aquamation as well. And it's not at the same level, adoption level, as like cremation or traditional burial is. But there's certainly people that have been using that over the course of the last couple of years. It's getting much more common.
Is it a big investment?
It's big.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And I was wondering also, if you allow green burials at your cemetery, is that an investment also? Or is that something that you have to make either yes or no or sometimes?
dedicated areas.
Yeah, maybe. I think it's largely dictated by, let's assume that we had legislative approval to do something like that. Yeah, I don't know that it would be necessarily dedicated to one section because, you know, green could be, let's say, for example, green could be considered unembalmed.
Unembalmed, no casket, maybe a biodegradable casket or materials.
Yep. So that's very possible. Now, I will say
this.
So
it could be partially green.
Yeah.
And maybe not fully green, but.
Most cemeteries will do that today, just as an FYI. So
okay,
as an example, Muslim religion. There's no embalming. There's burial within a specific time period. There is a desire in that community to have the decedent touch earth and face a specific direction.
Okay.
So that's something that most cemeteries can accommodate readily today.
That is nice to know. I did not know that.
Yep.
Okay. So they really, I mean, ultimately they are there to accommodate a diverse range of people.
Without a doubt.
With different religious views and requirements. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
I did want to expound on something you mentioned at the Death Cafe when I brought up the sustainability of cremation. I had, you know, been under the impression that it was up until, I guess, this new technology, not super sustainable. If everybody in the world decided to get cremated instead of getting buried, we might have some problems. But you mentioned there was a new laser that was decreasing the amount of particulate matter in the air. Could you?
Yes.
Do you have? Can we talk about that a little?
Yeah, absolutely. So the retort, which is actually the crematory machine, right? The modern version of those today, they're very expensive. So it could be up to $250,000 and above, somewhere in that area. They're designed to, I guess, meet local EPA or national EPA standards and local rules and regulations as well. And the way that they've designed these is for better sustainability or, you know, to be more relevant longer. So what they've done is there's a smokestack or an exhaust stack on the top of this. The one we have actually has lasers that point through it. So when there is particulate matter that goes up the exhaust stack, that machine senses the amount of particulate matter in that exhaust. It'll recirculate it through so that it makes sure it exhausts air that doesn't have that meets a certain particulate level.
Sure.
So I think that's pretty darn good, I think. You know what's interesting about cremation? And I didn't realize this. I didn't find it out from working in the industry. I have a former colleague at a different cemetery, a different funeral home. She went to India for vacation and she was doing a tour on, I think it's the Ganges River. And the purpose behind it was to actually drive by or float by the crematories. And I didn't know what I was looking at. I thought what I was looking at looked like a scene from it almost fit within Mad Max. It really did.
Oh, wow.
It was fascinating to look at. And it was an outdoor crematory. They had multiple areas within this. Imagine like this red rock cliff face with a base at the bottom that had where people could freely roam around and do what they needed to do. They had multiple crematories. There was just open air smoke coming up. And they run these crematories 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Wow. And that's common within the Hindu religion to do that. I was like, wow, it's an amazing thing to look at.
Yeah, what a neat thing to experience.
Yeah, kind of interesting.
That's a lot. So can we go back to preparing just for a minute? And I just want to throw out a little devil's advocate because listening, I'm a big Dave Ramsey person, and he always says, plan for your funeral, but don't pay for it because you could invest that $5,000 and grow it. But what I would imagine is that a lot of people don't do that. And so have you ever run into arguments related to that?
Absolutely. Every day. Like, oh, I don't want to do this.
I can invest this in something else.
Or I'm at a home show inviting people to come talk to us, right?
And smelling the cremation rocks.
Right?
Yeah. You said I wasn't the only one that did that, right?
You were not, yeah.
Can you tell us what those were?
The cremation stones, mm-hmm. The parting stones. So basically a parting stone is what they call it. And it looks like a river rock. It is, they kind of vary in color like natural stones do, and they also vary in shape, but they're mostly oval and they're smooth.
And they look exactly like hotel soap.
They do to it. Yes, they do. The ones we have definitely do.
So I picked it up thinking it was something to smell. And
why does it? Why does this not smell like vanilla or potpourri? It does not smell like either one of those.
Sorry, I kind of diverted his where you were going.
That's okay. That's a good, that takes me back to, we had a Holocaust victim who would bring like pieces of bone that were, or somehow they made it into, it looked like soap. So anyway, I don't know. Wow. He brought it back from the crematoriums from Auschwitz.
Oh, wow.
And so.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Total side note there.
Hey, that's the greatest thing about these podcasts, man. We are not inundated to one way of it being. We can veer off and come back. And so, I mean, surely we.
And I'm sure you hear all kinds of naysayers about pre-planning for funerals.
Yes, so that's what we were going with.
I do.
And, yep. What is your rebuttal?
The joke was, yeah, the rebuttal. I'm on the firing line. Here we go. Here we go. Brittany. So, you know, we'll be talking to people and sometimes people will walk by and they'll say, oh, you know what? I don't care what happens to me. I'm not here. Just throw me in a wood box. Doesn't matter. And I always cringe at that because being a family service counselor for as long as I was, I would sit down with the wife that just suffered an unexpected loss with a loved one that they'd been married to for 40, 50 years. And as dismissive as they were in that, as on the walk by,
right?
You know, it's all of a sudden become much more serious.
Yeah.
Right. And now we have to start talking about finances and other things as well. So I agree with you. I'm a planner and a saver. I believe in the message of the Dave Ramsey world, certainly. But here's what I've seen is there's not a lot of substitute for actually just taking the action, some action. And it doesn't have to be all of it. But the biggest, one of the biggest expenses is the property piece of it. So just buy property, pay $60 a month on it. And just get it paid off. Put it in the back of your mind.
This is if you want to be buried, right? Right.
Buried, or I guess I should say property, because property now includes things like, it could be a ground space, or it could be an above ground niche wall that's okay. Either indoor or outdoor. It could be granite faced. It could be glass faced, whatever. So pick it, pay it, and just forget about it. Because at some point, someone's going to need it, right? Argument today, I think a lot of people say, oh, you know what? Just cremate me, give my ashes to Uncle Bob. And I talked to a family like 2 weeks ago and they were talking themselves through this. They're like, oh, we're just going to give them to our daughter and daughter's going to give them so-and-so. And they just started counting people that they've lost already. And they're like, wait a second, she's going to have six people in her closet. That's bad.
I already have a storage problem. I don't know about you, but
well, that is a good point. I didn't really consider that, to be honest. Wow. Well, you know, my husband's uncle was in the hospital just last week, and he was convinced that he was dying, although he isn't. Thank God. Thank goodness, I should say. Thank God. Thank goodness. Thank all the things. But when I did think that he was dying, one of the things I recommended was that, you know, maybe you should go and prepay for cremation service.
Get her done. You know,
let's go check that box, Uncle Bob.
Well, you know, I mean, it's the same situation, though. You said somebody had been married 50 years. Him and his wife have been together all these, you know, 50 years, something like that. Maybe not 50 years. I think he's only in his 60s, but something along those lines. And, you know, he doesn't have any intention to make any plans. Not even a cremation.
Kind of like that attitude. Yeah. He was just talking.
Yeah. It was the exact same attitude, actually.
So if people do want to get a hold of you, how can they get a hold of you?
They can call me at the cemetery or funeral home.
And can you tell us again where that is?
Yeah. So I primarily work out of Rest Haven, which is in South Oklahoma City. And they can call me give him the number if you want.
Sure. Yeah. Russ Bridges.
Russ Bridges at 405-691-1661.
Awesome. So anything else that you want to, that you didn't get a chance to talk about? Sarah, anything?
I don't think so.
I think this is a really interesting subject. And, you know, I'm grateful for meeting you two, because I think the death doula concept and idea and how it supports families is really interesting. And I think that there's a significant gap between the hospice side of caring for a loved one that's passing and also the funeral home as well. And I think that there's a lot of, there's certainly a lot of unanswered questions generally in that dying process. And I don't know, I just, you know, the more research I've done on death doulas and the value and benefit they can add to a family, I think is pretty tremendous. And it's not something that a lot of people readily think about, but it's pretty much everything that they need to know so that their loved one can go through a process in a peaceful and calm way, but also in a way that allows them to be reassured that things are going to be taken care of as appropriate. So it's been an interesting thing to get to know you guys a little bit and open my eyes about how we can support better people in the community.
Well, I'm glad you see that. That's refreshing. Thank you.
And one of the things that we like to do to go along with on a different end of what you do, to just to bring up something else that death doulas do, is to help people with the paperwork of deciding how they want their end of life to go, because I know you take care of after death. We want to make sure that
the actual dying process is also addressed.
Yes. The people have their people picked that can speak for them if they can't speak for themselves, and they decide how they want their quality of life to be. So,
can I make a quick point to that?
Yeah.
So generally speaking to what, you know, the differences between planning and not planning, our industry research does say that people that don't plan these things in advance typically spend between 20 and 30% more than they should.
That makes sense, actually.
And I've seen it. The reason I say this is because, you know, when I've sat down with families going through an arrangement conference, either at the funeral home or the cemetery, I always follow up with them after the fact. That's part of the job, to see how we did. Did we help you honor your loved one the right way, et cetera, et cetera. And generally speaking, those people don't remember our conversations. They don't remember the conversation they had with the funeral director or spending whatever amount of money they did with them. It's usually after the fact they go, oh, okay, I guess I spent $10,000 here and I spent $5,000 here and so on and so on. So, you know, the value and benefit of prearranging this stuff in advance is, it's a huge deal. And it goes a long way towards providing a little bit of comfort. But I guess the biggest thing is they often do wonder, you know, am I doing the right thing for my loved one? And I'm not suggesting like that they need to spend a lot of money on something to memorialize a loved one. I think the most important part of this process, yes, I'm a business. I need, you know, I'm here to make money, right? But at the same time, I think the more important part of the job is to help families memorialize their loved one in the right way. And that right way could be very inexpensive. And I've seen anything from a very inexpensive funeral service all the way up to something that's incredibly extravagant. And I've seen people be happy all the way along the way through that. But I will say that, you know, what matters most is what is important to their loved one and how that loved one wants to be memorialized. So you don't have to spend a lot of money on these things. There's lots of options that people can choose to get those things in place so that they're not caught off guard.
I agree. And actually, just to go along with that, when my father passed, we used your place in Norman. And they were extremely accommodating, and we did not want to spend a lot of money because we wanted to spend more time on the memorial aspect of it. And they were extremely accommodating, and
that was great just to be able to go in, get it done. It was quick and easy and inexpensive and move on.
I think some of the best services that I've seen, because part of the being a family service counselor is that you're tasked with standing a graveside service for a family. And I've stood at hundreds of them. And again, I've seen like every dollar amount from just enough to way over the top. And the ones that that have been the most memorable are the ones that are just a simple graveside, no clergy there. All they're doing is sitting there trading stories back and forth.
Yeah.
And it was nice. Some of the most endearing services I've ever been witness to have been those.
That's nice to hear.
Awesome.
Well, thank you for being here with us today, Russ. We appreciate your time. Stay tuned for our next episode as we continue to explore every nook and cranny of all things death.
Till next time. Thank you for joining us as we journey through life's most enigmatic reality. I'm Jennifer O'Neill.
And I'm Sarah Kovash.
And we are
The Death Doula Duo.
The Death Doula Duo is brought to you by the Possibilities Podcast Platform.
If you have comments, suggestions, or would like to be on the show, please email us at thedeathdouladuo@gmail.com. Until next time, may all your discussions about death be lively.